This is the Chrysalis Color Analysis Podcast. Your hosts are Christine Skaman of 12 Blueprints
and Jorun Harness of Nordic Simplicity.
We are color analysts and we talk about how color can help you love the way you look.
We aim for publishing a new episode roughly once a month, but the best way to make sure you don't miss out on an episode is to subscribe to Chrysalis Color Analysis on your preferred podcast app. Hello, and welcome to episode 49, Color Analysis for the Next Generation. Today, we have the pleasure of introducing Michelle Bonney, our colleague in Florida. But by the time this episode is published, her last name will be MacIsaac. So Michelle MacIsaac. We've been wanting to have Michelle on the show for some time, and we are so happy that it's finally happened. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I was and I am Michelle Bonney, when we trained. I'm going to be changing my last name to MacIsaac because my husband's name change is also happening.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Michelle. I am looking forward to today's episode. Michelle trained as a color analyst with me in Prince Edward Island, where I still live today. I think it was 2019. And as a Korean American and one of our younger color analysts, Michelle had so many interesting perspectives. And I wished our conversations could continue after those 4 days. So I'm really happy that you're joining us today.
And it was 2019 when I was trained. And since then, so I spent some time in Korea and I moved from Portland, Oregon, where I was, and now I'm in Florida, where I see clients from my home studio.
You were in your late 20s when we met, and I was really impressed with how natural and professional you were speaking with our draping models and how quickly you took to the system, the process of the analysis. You had had some history with color analysis before we met. Is that right?
Before and after, I've had history. So at the time I was 28 years old, I did a little bit in the import-export business and a little bit in the financial services. But then later I got a job in the tech industry, and you know, the work attire is like so casual, instead of like suits and jackets that I was used to. And so basically I got super interested because my managers and higher ups, like they would look so put together in the casual clothes, than anyone else that I had met. And so I just didn't know how to look, good and like comfortable. They look like themselves every day. And cause I only know how to put makeup on, for nightclubs. And so I don't know how to put makeup on for like work, which just basically meant I wanted it to be like super fast and still look good with like good foundation and lipstick. And I couldn't find that. And it was frustrating cause I felt like I could be prettier. This is actually when I remembered, learning about, personal color analysis. And then I started getting really, really obsessed.
Mm. So I'm curious to know more about, you know, where did you go from there? What was the first step after that realization, you know, that you noticed all these higher ups being so lovely in their casual clothing?
Yeah. So actually the first time I ever heard about personal color was during high school summer break in Korea. I was watching this show about like makeup that's for like teens, and they were actually talking about personal color analysis there. Like it's really important to know if you're warm toned or cool toned for good makeup, which I totally forgot about until, you know, when I got frustrated at my job. So when I did remember it, I really wanted to learn more about it in English, because I'm better at English. but of course, you know, when you're doing that, you have to come across 12 Blueprints. And so I bought Christine's book, and I would like bring the book to hang out with my friends. So my real like color analysis was with Christine during my color analyst training.
Mm. So Michelle, is it correct that after your training with Christine, you had another color analysis in Korea? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually went to a really well-known Korean analysis, I didn't really like my experience. It was really interesting, but she actually looked at my skin tone and she didn't think that I was gonna be a winter because I'm not very light or pale, I guess. Because I feel like my skin, when you just look at me, looks a little bit darker and it doesn't look like a big contrast level then with like my hair color. And so since I'm like slightly darker out of the Korean population, but like not too dark, she thought that I would be like soft summer. She also did some draping, but it was really, really hard for me to like understand like the reasoning behind the order of the drapings, or like the conclusions. And it was really hard to ask questions. I would ask and then she would like give me the looks, like, you know, she was not happy with them. But I really don't think it's just her. I just think that a lot of people in Korea, like, especially if you're like in authority positions, they don't, like, you're not really supposed to ask questions. And it just has to do with Korea's quite hierarchical, where like, you know, you are expected to use honorifics, even if you guys are like sort of friends, but if there's like age differences, like even by 1 year. So I think my takeaway from that was that I really want the customers to be able to understand the process, like with my own customers, and feel like they know why each decision is being made and feeling like it wasn't rushed, you know, and just feeling like that I was like taking good care of them. And because, you know, it's a lot of trust to tell me like what looks good on me is pretty intimate. And I also feel like that's why my sessions like tend to run pretty long with my clients.
So what do you define when you say that they run long? What is your definition of a long session with your clients?
Yeah, good question. So I write down 4 hours on my website, but it's really anywhere from like 3.5 to 5 hours. Just because like the 2 hours is how long it takes to get to their season. And then it just depends on how much they want to talk about all the other things like hair, makeup, and clothes, etc.
Yeah, exactly the same for me. The two, when I see people who have been analyzed before, the two most common, I don't want to say complaints, but things that disturb them about the previous analysis is, number one, she went too fast. And number two, I didn't understand why these choices were being made. So I think about that a lot. So I'm about an hour and a half to the season because I want the client to know why they're the season and then how to look at the colors of clothes and makeup on themselves with their own colors, you know, like if it didn't matter what our own colors were, then everything would look the same on everybody. And so once we have the season, then we move on to more interactive activities, how to work with your colors. And that's kind of fun. And there's so much to see and do.
Yeah. So with the Korean analysts, I really couldn't ask questions. And I think the sad thing is that I, like you said, I feel like people really enjoy talking about like why they came, what insecurities they had, and like feeling like they're kind of more resolved after.
Yeah.
People really like that.
So I understand that you think that the client should never feel rushed, right? Exactly how long you take, that's kind of insignificant. And that makes perfect sense to me. And I totally agree. Some people have a lot on their minds and we do want every client to leave with a full experience. Nobody should leave feeling like they have unresolved issues or unanswered questions, right?
Yeah, I agree. We, you know, it's sometimes or know where to look for their answers. Michelle, do you see a variety of ages in your clients?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting how like big TikTok has been, because definitely like before the pandemic, it was entirely, I think, yeah, everyone was retired women. But now a lot of them are like early 30s and they're from TikTok, like not too much younger, I think. I mean, some people do come in their 20s, but many seem to come around like big events like wedding time or like getting really serious in their profession or like even coming after some kind of like personal tragedy to rebuild their life. So I do think the number in my 30s is like big. I wonder if that has to do with the fact that I'm also in my early 30s now.
Could be. Yeah, it's very interesting. I see the exact same thing in Norway. I find that the average age of my clients is getting lower. They're getting younger. And just like you guys, I always ask clients what made them decide to have a color analysis. And lately, the younger clients, they say that color analysis is all over TikTok. And that this made them curious to see if they can get this kind of experience locally. And then they Google color analysis and then they find me. So thank you, TikTok.
Yeah. And then, you know, the only hard thing is when people ask, like, can you do parties? Because like, they go pretty quick. But usually I feel like people are really, really pleasantly surprised when they like find out how involved and careful it is, the whole process.
Do you work differently with young clients, Michelle? Like, would you show them different makeup, for example?
No, I don't think so. I mean, other than like some people being more conscious of wrinkling and maybe some like settling that happens because of the makeup pigments. But I think it's all the same process. But should I?
Well, I'm asking myself, I don't think I'm different with younger people in any aspect. I mean, with any age of person, we want them to look healthy and balanced and defined and just the best version of themselves. Do you, Yara?
No, not in the draping process, not at all. It's the same, the color analysis process, you know, it's pretty standardized and systematic. So it would be the same process, whatever the age of the client. But during the conversation in the draping, while we're doing the draping, we might talk about different things, picture different scenarios when we flip the drapes to pinpoint what we're looking for. For example, like a young one might be a student with different everyday scenarios than a retired person or somebody who works in a bank or a financial institution.
Yeah. And that's a good point that the analysis process is exactly the same. The order of the drapes, the criteria for choosing and eliminating, the age makes no difference at all. And it's a good point about different analogies. You know, I used to think if it's a date or an interview would apply better to people of a certain age. But these days it applies whether you're 25 or 75. Everybody's going on dates and going to interviews. I don't know if I'd say picture you're in the boardroom with a young person, although going out makeup could apply. I don't really do too much blingy stuff. But over 25, I totally talk about the boardroom or whatever professional environment they hope to join, because that makes a difference. A hairstyling community is looking for different things, let's say. And I also try to put folks in different positions. Picture you're the one doing the interviews and you have to hire someone. Because that way it relates to things going on in their life. Students, politicians, public speakers, so they can see what the color choice is, how it's going to impact the life they live and how other people respond to them. That's not an age thing. I ask questions about how they want to look, if they want a bold lip, if they like casual clothes. Young people, I find, are more into trends. But the idea is just to get the best color for you in your life. We talk about silver hair more with older people, though. That does come up.
Yes, that's absolutely relevant. So back to TikTok. One thing that makes me really happy is that these young clients that come to us after becoming curious about color analysis on TikTok, they come and then they have this SciArt-based color analysis. And they discover that it's a really long and thorough and scientific, systematic approach. Now, being not familiar with TikTok, I do think that it might be difficult to convey the experience of an in-person full color analysis in those short videos. It all happens really, really quickly. And maybe that's why they ask if you can do parties.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, like, I always like encourage my clients to tell me if they disagree with whatever I'm saying about like the drapes and like what we're seeing in the mirror, just so that we can like really get a chance to talk about it. Because I feel like it'd be so painful to have like self-doubt after, you know, they went home, because that's why I want them to be like really involved in the process.
I really hear you about the self-doubt. Confidence is often what clients of all ages say that they're looking for. Well, it was kind of what you were looking for, right? And sometimes they know their season. They come in knowing and they are right, but they have no idea why or what to do with it. And then the minute someone comes along with some new opinion, well, they're kind of vulnerable to it.
Yeah. So like there's like three questions I always ask when we're going through the analysis. So I ask like, oh, do you look approachable? Like, does this person in the mirror look approachable? Another one is, would they be a CEO or give a TED talk? And the third one is, do they live in a nice, like comfortable house? Like I ask, like, do you look like you have your life in order? That's kind of what the house question is supposed to do. Kind of just like you're not sort of trying to be anybody, because home is where you can be intimate, right? Like what kind of person you are like comes out when you're at home. So like I'm just saying, like when I look at like your reflection in the mirror, like when you look at this person, like do you feel like their home would be really chaotic, or it would be like a really relaxing and comfortable place? And it would feel like that because you look peaceful and you look like you accept yourself. I also think I ask these questions because I'm like on Instagram and I always see like pictures of nice houses. It's just like an aspiring thing, I think.
I love those questions that you ask your clients. They seem like all three of them seem like questions that really clarify the changes going on during the draping. And that is kind of new to me, that comfy house analogy. It's really intriguing. It kind of, I feel it relates to feeling good in your own skin, which is so important. And that's something I hear my clients say, that they're looking for, what they're looking for as a result of a color analysis.
Yeah, I find those questions are good too, because our clients are not really buying a color palette. They're buying better hair color or confidence in their cosmetics. And something that I relate to is, you know how clothes can sometimes look like the clothes don't belong to the person? It's almost like they're wearing a disguise. And then there are clothes that are, yeah, of course they're wearing that. What else would they wear? And it doesn't have to be a particular style or occasion of clothing. They just look, well, what you said, you know, just feeling good in yourself. And you were really good at this in person, actually, Michelle. I don't know if you remember, we had a male client, head of HR for a large group of communication companies. And before we got into the specifics of the optical effects with the drapes, I asked you to just pull back the lens a little bit and say, who is this person to you? Wearing this color, wearing that color, you walk into his office. Who is this person? How do you relate to him? And you said, the first person doesn't look available to me. Well, his eyes snapped open and he turned the chair and he looked straight at you and he wanted to hear more. And in that moment, he got it. He got what color choice, the shirt he pulled out of the closet that morning, has to do with him and his life. I think too, you know, I guess this would be true for any industry, that if it delivered exactly what people see on TikTok, they might be kind of disappointed. They sort of maybe expect a more superficial rundown. It's the only thing they know how to want when they come to see us. But then they see what we do and they get how it works. And they're a bit amazed and feel so much more accepting of themselves and in control of their appearance and purchases, which I think applies as much to young people as it does to older people.
Yeah, for sure. And I always like ask, like, so what did you actually like see? Like, what did you see on TikTok that made you interested?
Good question.
And then they always tell me it's like the fact that they actually saw the drapes like move across the face, and then the face would like change, and then so they'd be like, oh, this isn't fake. And so I mean, not only that, I just am like realizing like how like effective like TikTok marketing is. Like, for example, if I post the exact same like short video on TikTok and on Instagram, like it'll play like 900 times on TikTok, but then like Instagram only gives me 300 plays. It's like so weird. I do think the reach is higher just because I think the involvement from the viewer is a little bit lower on TikTok. So like you just keep swiping and you get new content, and the algorithm is set up like if you watch anything like longer than like a split second, you know, all the algorithm. So it like it's just like gives you like constantly similar content. And you know, it's got all the other similar stuff, like, you know, liking content and like following certain people and things like that.
Yeah. And it's a real means of communicating for the next generation. I mean, I couldn't be there. Maybe you could, Yaron, but I could not be authentic on TikTok. But I'm so happy that Michelle is there. And we'll add, by the way, Michelle's social sites in the show notes for our listeners if you'd like to visit Michelle on other platforms. I've barely seen TikTok. It sounds kind of passive and addictive at the same time, which I think has been said about its effect on the brain of young people, or maybe all people. There seems to be an interest on TikTok in finding that next big thing, like how color analysis is getting attention on that platform. I often wonder how long these things last, but there's something kind of disruptive about TikTok introducing that new thing, maybe also that short video format. So things either work or they don't. There isn't time to distract people, you know, feed them the usual marketing salad so they go out and buy something that's going to do nothing for them. You see the famous young model, the staged pictures, and well, you've mentioned, right, Michelle, that new ideas can go viral really fast. Like I was reading about the skincare line Paula's Choice. They've been around since the early 90s and they slowly grew. And then their 2% beta hydroxy acid, it blows up on TikTok like it's brand new within just the last few years. I read this article on Beauty Independent. I love these business articles and I'll link it in the show notes where Paula says in general about how appearance is marketed to us. What you're worried about isn't true. What we've been told and sold about skincare for so long. And in 2021, Unilever bought the brand for $2 billion. Like that's B as in brilliant. You know, the next thing I hope makes makes it big on TikTok, the next new again thing is going to be plum and berry lip colors. Maybe that's what's going to turn that around.
I ordered a book called Flawless, Lessons in Looks and Culture from the K-Beauty Capital. I got the Kindle edition and we'll put links in the show notes for it. I found it an absolutely fascinating collection of observations from a Korean Chinese American TV journalist who spent 4 years in South Korea as the bureau chief of NPR. And the book describes how she met the Korean beauty culture. It's about the beauty industry, not about color analysis. But I understand you had some experience. Well, you told us a little bit about it, but can you tell us a little more about your experience with color analysis in Korea?
Yeah, it's really different over there. The beauty standards and I think a little bit of how color analysis is done. What I really, really liked is that the Korean like personal color analyst, she did put me in summer. And so it's just really nice to know that she like, you know, they are saying that like that you can put Korean people in all the different seasons.
Absolutely. I've often thought back to a conversation we had during your training, which was that in many cultures, many people may belong to the same season, not only Asians and winters, but I imagine there's not that many autumns in Finland. Of course, it's not strict, and I've never been to Finland. And there are many other influences on who might visit a color analyst. The question was more about whether people would feel they hadn't been seen by me, the color analyst, if the majority were in the same season. I wonder if here, a group of six friends came to see me, and turns out five were soft summers. I don't know if they would doubt the result or feel unsure of how to express themselves using the same palette of colors.
That's really interesting. So I feel like Koreans, especially, I don't think would really mind being in the same season. Because I just think that their emphasis really about like looking their best, their very best, instead of like a focus on being an individualist. I only say that because like whenever I visit Korea, like everybody has this hair, has like would have like the same hairstyle. It's whatever is like trending at that moment. So it's because it's so like trend conscious, you don't really want to be like part of the out group that's not participating in the trend. And I think that also just has to go with like the, I think there's just more of a collective like cultural sentiment where like shared characteristics is like where you feel like good about yourself. You know, you have more pride in it actually. Because you feel like, oh, I'm like not standing out too much.
Yeah, a sense of belonging, I suppose. Michelle, the thing about everybody wearing the same trend, is there an age cutoff for that?
That's a really good question. So I feel like if you're like, I mean, it's definitely like the younger crowd. What do I mean by younger? Younger, maybe into like your 40s, younger. Maybe 50s a little bit too, but I think over that, the trends kind of go away, but I think it kind of goes away more so because they're not too concerned about aesthetics. Because I think, I don't know, I might have all my history mixed up, but it's just like people who went through like the Korean War and things like that, they're not very interested in aesthetics.
Well, it sounds about the same here, actually. Yeah. I just wasn't sure if, you know, everybody from your age to mine and Yoren's would be wearing the same hairstyle, but I would say it's about the same. And you said that folks in Korea don't mind being the same season. They want to look their best. And we know within any season, there's plenty of ways to individualize it. Another thing I'm interested in, Michelle, is Korean makeup. It has this huge reputation. And is it in some way special? Or have I just heard the hype and the marketing and I confess I've never really looked into it further?
So actually, you know, a lot of my clients who come see me, they bring a lot of Korean like makeup brands, like eyeshadows and foundations. So I do see it a lot. The thing is, kind of like you, I'm actually like not the best person to ask. I'm like not that interested in Korean makeup that much. It's just that I know that in Korea, just about like everyone goes to a dermatologist. It's like what you do. You go see a dentist like once a year, right? But then in Korea, people also go see the dermatologist like a lot. I don't know. So I feel like it has to do with like they're just like really good with their skincare, just in terms of like actual like medical kind of skincare. And as like a like, you know, kind of like growing up here, I find it really interesting that the Korean stuff is getting like so big. Like I have like so many of my friends who like to ask me about like Korean like dramas and, you know, like K-pop stars. And I kind of feel like maybe the cosmetic stuff is just coming together with the cultural like wave, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. With the cosmetic, the Korean cosmetic and skincare products that get really big, I'm not sure if you know the answer or would want to answer, but can you find equivalent products here? I mean, is the quality there really better, or do people, are they looking for, do they want a different look?
I think it kind of has to do with, Koreans are really picky in terms of like things being feeling very like wearable on the skin, like how it feels. They like it when it feels like there's nothing like sitting on top of their skin. And they also really like things that feel more natural. So like tinted lips instead of like pigmented lipstick or like even too pigmented foundation. Although I do hear that that's actually changing, that they're like getting into like real foundation a lot more. But yeah, especially like I think the big one is sunscreen. Like Korean sunscreen is like so much more wearable like than most like American sunscreens, because they feel so like heavy and tacky, like the American ones. But yeah. And oh, I think an interesting thing is that Koreans really don't like harsh or like strong, like actives or like strong, like ingredients. Like they wouldn't actually use retinol like in their products, which is like interesting. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's also really funny. I just recently had gone to like makeup artists in Korea, because I got my wedding done there recently, and some other stuff. What's really funny is like the makeup artists there, they use like American products, like American makeup products, like Dior, NARS, and Fenty.
Yeah, like here, are Koreans, are they brand and label conscious? Are logos and that kind of thing significant?
Oh yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like, no, but it's just like, they're like very, very brand conscious, you mm-hmm. know? They love US like luxury brands, like the European luxury brands. And then whereas I feel like a lot of my clients here are really into kind of like L'Oreal grade stuff of like Korean stuff. Mm-hmm. And I find it really interesting. I think it's kind of like whatever is imported is a better type of thing.
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, kind of same as here, or how here used to be. It's not that way anymore, I don't think. I'm kind of out of those loops. I'm not very brand conscious myself, but yeah, I think it's kind of similar.
Mm. Well, in Norway, Norway is such a small country that I don't think there is a lot of, I don't think there's any skincare line or brand that's actually produced in Norway. So for us, it's all imported. Anyway, but Korean skincare is very sought after in Norway. There's a lot of online stores that sell them. The Korean skincare, they import it and sell it. So imported stuff is important. The makeup, I don't think it's that much focused on Korean makeup. And personally, I have found that a couple of Korean sunscreens, that they're just amazing. And so I really, really love them. I'm really picky and I have sensitive skin. And then when I tried the Korean sunscreen, I thought, oh, so this is how sunscreen actually can feel. It's like they don't have that sunscreen smell and feel. It's fantastic. And well, of course, since I've said that, I have to link to my favorites in the show notes.
Yes, you do.
I do. And I've also, I must confess, I've watched some Korean Netflix shows, and I notice how the makeup of these women is very different from the US and also the European makeup. It seems like the focus is so much more on radiant skin. The women all have beautifully even pale skin, and they use almost no blush, very little visible blush anyway, and then very little eye makeup, just a little eyeliner, definitely no smoky eyes. And lipstick is always very nice, red and transparent, more looking like a stain than an opaque lipstick. Is this a common makeup style?
Yeah, it is. So good skin is always at the forefront. And I think that's why like eye makeup and lip makeup is a little bit more sheer, because they really want to preserve like the clean skin look, because that's like you spent a lot of money on it going to dermatologists and stuff. But yeah, and like in terms of like the look that you get, I kind of feel like I don't know, I might get flack saying this, but I kind of feel like it's a way to make the women look like younger, kind of almost kind of like children. And I think that kind of has to do with that way you look a little bit like less threatening. So like it's a very beautiful look, and like it's like maybe less powerful though. Like as like a, maybe as a, I don't know, maybe political power in terms of that kind of powerful.
Whereas in North America and Europe, makeup is more focused on making you look mature. And, you know, those smoky eyes, they're very, I don't know, I want to say something, but I'm not going to say it. The smoky eyes. And you know that these models that they use are like barely 16, 18 years old, but they make them up and they look to look older. So it sounds like it's the exact opposite of the Korean trends where they, you know, want them to look younger.
I often find too that Korean makeup, when I see it, it's kind of invisible looking. You can't hardly see it. And so when you combine that with summer colored clothes, you can't hardly see the whole person. And why it looks so much better with for Korean women or all Asian women that I've seen, if you're not going to wear the makeup, which is fine, lots of North Americans don't wear makeup, wear your clothing colors, because you appear and it looks, I think it looks a whole lot better.
That's exactly it. And I tell, there are so many of my clients, they come and everything is wrong and they want to find their own perfect makeup, but finding their season and wearing their colors in clothing, it suddenly,
yeah,
the makeup isn't a problem anymore because they look lovely even without foundation or even without makeup.
Agreed.
Mm. Well, anyway, back to the transparency. I'm thinking that one thing we, especially winters, can learn from the Korean style is that when winters age, they look better if they dial back the opaqueness and the heavy makeup, but keep the chroma intensity of makeup without changing to a softer season. At least that's how I advise older clients who are winters, you know, to keep that winter intensity, but in the more transparent formulas. And for example, when a woman who's been doing opaque foundation and powder, if they change to a tinted moisturizer and a dewy look, anyway, this is all my personal experience. I used to wear more dramatic and darker and more opaque bright winter lipsticks, but these days I feel better with transparent formulas. Kind of gives a kinder, younger expression, which I like. So, Michelle, what about you? As a Korean living in the US, how do you like the US makeup the way it's done?
I really like dewy skin that's even toned. So kind of like a no sunspots or freckles kind of look. But I feel like everything else is a little bit more American leaning, maybe a little bit pared back American, because I do really like eyeshadow, but I go a little bit lighter on it. Maybe I just don't feel very confident in my makeup skills, but yeah, but I always love a good, like, thick cat eye eyeliner look, and with blush, and I like a very opaque full lipstick look. I mean, even before I got personal color analysis, I've never really liked sheer colors on my face. Like, I didn't like the tinted look very much, the blurred lines look. Yeah, I don't know, which kind of reminds me, like, when I did get makeup done, like, in Korea by a Korean makeup artist, I felt, like, blurred again, which, like, I already knew that I didn't like, because I didn't like it since I was in middle school. But yeah, it's definitely how I do makeup is different, because I love like doing cat eyes and full lips.
Mm-hmm. So products, let's talk about products. Do you have any favorites that you could share with us, Michelle?
Yeah. So in terms of products, my absolute favorite, foundation is the Fenty foundation. And my shade is 170. And then I also love the 12 Blueprints makeup line, because it like helps me so that I don't have to think too much. You know, you just go to our site and then you put in the bright winter and, like, you know, all the colors are going to be perfect. And I've also noticed that they're like fantastic quality and they last such a good long time. And like they wear really well throughout the day. So that's that. What is it? My favorite sunscreen is actually La Roche's sunscreen. I have it right here so I can read the name, but it's really long. Or maybe we can just put it in the show notes.
You bet. Good idea. In Korea, people do want to look like they're friends, from what I understand. And yet you always stood out to me, Michelle, as a young person who saw yourself as an individual. You listen to your friends, but you make your own choices. You can look in a mirror and you can actually see yourself even before you and I met. And you're fine with what you see. And so as a color analyst, it is thrilling to have younger analysts with whom young people can relate and be open to looking like their real self, you know, beyond trends and friends.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do. I thought a lot about all this stuff growing up, just because so many of my friends got plastic surgery. It's just kind of I think it's quite common in Korean culture. But for me, I kind of thought that it was a little bit sad seeing so many of my friends going through it. I know that a lot of people might disagree, because they're like, well, obviously, you know, it's what's wrong. They have more choices, like they can, they're feeling empowered to change things. But I don't know. I always thought it was a little bit sad.
Yeah, to that for sure.
So, Michelle, I have another question. The name of your website is Moon Over Star. I find that hauntingly beautiful. Tell us about it. What is behind that name?
Thank you. That's an amazing compliment. So actually my maiden name, it used to be Moon, my last name. And Over Star just sounded so pretty. I actually had that as my Instagram tag for over like 10 years ago. But in order to actually connect it to like personal color analysis, I always feel like we can see ourselves very well, you know, in the reflection of the mirror, just so you can always see the moon. Whereas I feel like stars are so far away, and like, you know, like celebrity stars are so far away. And so it's kind of like, why are we like wondering about Taylor Swift and or like other like celebrities? You know, it's better to wonder about yourself, like the thing that you can see every single day, very close to you, right in front of you. And I also thought it was like kind of poetic in how like the moon is always like changing, like sometimes it's there, sometimes it's gone. And so it was just a nice metaphor for like the like transformation sort of too.
Well said, Michelle. I love this about you, an independent thinker and also an artistic thinker. I think the same thing. Why is everybody comparing themselves to Taylor Swift? Well, because I guess we see so many images and you got to compare yourself to someone. I see how she's aspiring, but still there's a, it makes me think of an Einstein quote or attributed Einstein. Don't judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, and don't judge a tree by its ability to swim underwater. Which is true. We can't compare ourselves to Taylor Swift or Beyonce. That we have nothing to do with them. It's two different worlds. Those images are digitally adjusted. And anyhow, we know what the difference is, but boy, we can get carried away with those comparisons.
True. And Moon Over Star is you, Michelle.
Thank you.
So, Michelle, thank you so much for being with us today. I feel like we've kind of barely scratched the surface of possible conversations. There are so many more topics waiting in the wings for another visit. I really hope that we can invite you to join us another time.
Thank you for having me. It was honestly such a pleasure to be here, and I would love to come back. This was so much fun.
Michelle, it was wonderful to spend time with you and to see you spreading your wings, both as a color analyst and a person understanding the world and enriching the lives of other people. Thanks so much for being here. And to our listeners, we look forward to being with you next month. Bye-bye.